That's early. It's still snowy here.
Right, I know. Hi, it's Diane. It is Tuesday, the 10th of March. I'm here with the 2 o'clock group, and we got Sue, and we've got April with us today, and we're thinking that a bunch of people might be on spring break. So hopefully you're listening to us and you're someplace warm, because it's not so warm where at least where April is, I'm sure. I don't know. Sue, it sounds like it's not warm where you are either. So let's just do a quick check-in. How have things been going? We talked about motivation last time. I don't know if you guys were on or if you guys listened to the recording, but I'm curious how things have been going at your place.
I can start. Actually, last week was just Diane and myself, right? I believe it was
Diane.
Yeah. And that was actually a delight in many ways. So thank you for that and for not canceling. But and what Diane and I were talking about was motivation in regards to my son and with my taking aim of helping my son start his homework, stay engaged, and then be able to turn in the work. And my mission was to take a look at the five different types of motivation and see which ones kind of worked really well, well, which were successful for him. And it was kind of interesting. It was kind of interesting because some of them definitely didn't. Like I noticed with some things like urgency and some of the competition, he would just shut down. It just felt like it was too much. And he just predicted that it wouldn't work in his favor. So that's something that's kind of interesting to take a look at and to see how that can be changed through time, too. But it was kind of a big take aim. And so it's definitely still in progress because there were certain days that I would forget it and not stay focused on it, but it was helpful to do, and it was helpful to see what really helped him. The novelty did, the humor I've always known, and interest does too, but some of the homework to be able to get him interested in it is hard to do. So I continue to work on this.
Well, that's great. It sounds like you made some really good progress. Kind of really just focusing in on that one particular aspect.
Yes, very much so. Yeah. Very much so.
Yeah, cool. Well, in the earlier group today, and a couple of times today, we've already been kind of talking about homework and about the multiple steps of homework. I'm going to remind you, have you seen the 12 steps of homework tip sheet we did last fall? Is that jogging your memory at all, Sue?
Boy, it isn't mine. I'll have to go back.
Well, and I'm happy to send it to you again, but I just was working with a parent on it today, and we were talking about the fact that you kind of really have to go through step by step and really kind of see where the breakdown is. If you're, you know, it's when we talk about taking aim, I mean, it's not enough to say my taking aim on the fact that my child's having a hard time turning in their homework. There's so many different pieces to why that, where in the process it might be breaking down, and so it can be really helpful to kind of look step by step and try to figure it, and class by class, depending on if your child has more than one teacher as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm happy to pass that on to you if that's not jogging your memory.
Yeah, that would be great.
Okay. All right, so April, what about you?
Well, we have a lot going on. But one of the things that I did say, I talked to Elaine last week about Nate's pretty much kind of a two-week kid, but we're trying to figure out, you know, the 504 or IEP and just kind of sitting back and accepting the fact that my kid needs some extra help and it's okay to go ask for it. And that has been, we've been working on that. We found that we're open enrolled, so we found some really big complications with that. So they can send us back to our home school and our home district, which is, but I have the information and I know what to do now and know how to go ahead and forward and how to help them.
So one step forward, two steps forward, one step back. Is that what you mean? So it's about kind of feeling brave enough to deal with it, but knowing what to do. Is that right?
Right. Yep. Yep.
Awesome. So I don't know. Did you listen at all to the call on motivation? Is that something that you've been thinking about, or?
No, I was still on curiosity.
Okay. Well, I'd encourage you. So motivation and curiosity are like two of the ones that I love the most, and I think are really very foundational ones. And so it might be helpful for you to go back, April, and you know, maybe you can listen to the call Sue and I did, or you can listen to one of the other groups where there was a few more folks on the call. But it's a really good conversation just about the critical nature of understanding your kid's motivator in every situation. So it can be a powerful tool to use.
Okay, great. So let's
go back. So this week we're going to talk about one of the Parenting Positively tools. We're going to talk about two of the Parenting Positively tools, actually, championing and celebrating. Let's loop back around. Sue, where do you want to take aim for our conversation this week?
I think to continue what we're working on in regards to homework and how to be able to, if I'm understanding this correctly, how to be able to point out those successes when it comes to my son jumping in and starting his homework and being able to stay engaged.
Mm-hmm. Great. So kind of helping him jump in. And so you're taking aim on getting started with homework and also staying focused through it. So which, if you had to pick one of those two, is it more about getting him to jump in or getting him to stay sustained?
Wow. It's a close runner-up. I think doing the staying engaged one.
Okay. Well, I think that this is the piece of it, is that I'm asking you because they're really two distinct steps. And when we take aim, it's like, okay, so which one are you going to take aim on? And the reality is you might handle encouraging him to jump in with a different tool than you would to encouraging him to finish, right? So in this instance, you could use positive parenting, which I'll talk about in a minute, in either case. But, you know, just kind of play with the fact that there may be different tools in the different aspects of it. Does that make sense to you?
That makes perfect sense. Yep, it does.
Okay. Okay, April, what about you? Where do you want to take aim?
I think I need to continue to wait. I had been working on myself getting up earlier in the morning, and that's been working if I'm up about 45 minutes before everybody else. Daylight savings time has kind of challenged that, but we're back on track. But I want to be positive getting him from upstairs to downstairs in the morning. That is a really rough transition, and I need to be happy that he made it downstairs, even partially dressed. That's usually a good thing. So,
okay, right. So the challenge area is getting from upstairs to downstairs. You know, it's an area that being more positive would help you, and it's really about trying to do it. It's a challenge that it's not happening now, or that it's melting down as it's happening?
You know, we have three or four things that need to get done upstairs, and so I'm always focusing on what didn't get done if I have to send him back upstairs. But if I'm nice about it and, oh, hey, you know, can you tell me which ones you got done? And, yep, this, okay, is your bed made? And sometimes I'm not very nice about the ones that we didn't get done. I need to be, I guess what my focus is celebrating what got accomplished in the morning and redirecting him if I need to, if it has to get done, but not always picking him apart for, all right, why didn't you get done? You know, I mean.
Mm. Yeah, no, I get it completely. So that's a great segue, April. Thank you for that, because this whole concept of parenting positively is such an important piece of what we're doing as parents, and it's so hard because for a couple of reasons. One is that our kids get the opportunity to be wrong a lot, and And number two, our focus is on fixing a problem. I mean, I think that even the most conscious of us, you know, it's hard because we're trying to get our kids to fit in, or we're trying to get our kids to do what we need them to do, and we're trying to solve a problem. And so when you are focused on solving a problem, it's very easy to stay focused on what's not working. And what we know about motivation and behavior management and success is that by focusing on what's working as opposed to focusing on what's not working, we actually can create more of a sense of motivation, more of a sense of fulfillment and success, both for our kids and for us. And so, you know, you think about, you know, your kid for a second and just, you know, I'm going to challenge you to kind of just take a snapshot in your head of one of those moments, and we've all had them, where you said something really very favorable to your kid, or you've given them a great smile, you've given them a good attaboy, attagirl, whatever it was, and you can just see the smile on their face and just how much they light up. It's like, maybe, you know, if your kids are a little bit older, you don't see it as often, but, you know, just remember that moment where you said something and they're like, wow, Mom, that felt really great. And you could just see their whole body light up because they felt so good about what they had accomplished. And then, you know, take a minute to think about a moment where you've criticized your kid and think about the energy that you've gotten back, whether it's, you know, they feel defeated, or whether they feel like, okay, here I go again, I can do it, you know, or if they, you know, get defensive and step back, or whatever the reaction is. I mean, we can tell just energetically that it changes such a dynamic, and we do spend a lot of our time focusing on what's not working.
Yeah.
And I read this article once, and it was such a huge challenge for me, and it talked about the fact that if you want to maintain a favorable relationship with anyone, whether it's a kid or an adult or whoever, the ratio of positive interactions to not so positive interactions needed to be ideally 5-1 and no less than 3-1, which means that for every time we correct our child, ideally what we want to be doing is praising them at least 3 times. So if you think, and April, I have that same sort of challenge with the, you know, getting from the pillow to the bus stop is what I call it. But if I think about the number of times I correct my kids from the pillow to the bus stop, the number of times that I would have to praise them is pretty enormous, you know, and so it becomes this challenge of, okay, how do I even maintain a balance of 1-1, let alone 3-1, when I'm trying to get stuff done around the house?
Mm-hmm.
But it's real, so it becomes an even bigger challenge. And so what we talked about in the workbook today, in this week's chapter, is about the fact that, you know, it's easy to find the fault. We're going to challenge you to find the success, because the solutions are there, the motivation is there, and it makes everybody feel so much better. I mean, that's just the reality. And so, you know, something as simple as, you know, like what you were just saying, April, it's like if you've got a list of 5 things that need to be done and 3 of them are done, it's kind of like, you got 3 done? Awesome. High five. Boom. Let's go. Okay, go get the next 2 done. Let's do it. You know, as opposed to, okay, what didn't you get done? Even that subtle difference. From an energy perspective, I know for myself, when I say high five as opposed to what didn't you do, I mean, it just feels different.
Yeah,
and
it does.
So it does. And so it's, you know, I always try no matter what, because I'm trying to figure out how to at least get to 1-1. You know, if I ask my child to do something and they comply, I thank them no matter what. Even if I ask them 17 times and they didn't, the 18th time when they comply, I say thank you for doing that. You know, because it's always a way to at least change the balance from, you know, correction to support. So, you know, it's number one, it's about just the ratio. Number two is about celebrating. Because a lot of times our kids do little stuff, but it's really hard for them. So if you think about, so you were talking about the following through with homework. I mean, just staying focused for 10 minutes worth of homework may be really, really hard for your child. And so if you say, wow, you're doing a really good job, staying focused, good for you, keep it going, or, hey, do you need to take a break, can be a great way to keep them moving and keep them motivated. Especially younger kids, they get really motivated by this stuff. I remember Jacob 504 for the longest time said, praise him. You know, it said in his 504, praise him like crazy, basically, because, you know, it was very clear that he was motivated by external praise. So what we're trying to do this week is to catch our kids being good. You know, notice everything they do right, even if it's followed by something that's not so right. Every time you correct them, turn around and do a celebration of praise. And be willing to celebrate, you know, the little stuff and not just the big stuff. You know, focus on the process more than the outcome might be a helpful thing to think about. And then the other piece of this is about being your child's champion. And that's really what we're talking here is, you know, you're the one that helps clean up the messes, and you're the one that can inspire and support them in a different way than anybody else can. And so if you think about somebody who's like the champion of a cause, they're out there in front of everybody waving the flag saying, hey, we're doing great things, we're going to make this happen, you believe in what's possible, you focus on what's working, you know, you're unfailing in the support. I mean, it's hard to do that for our kids, but it can make such a difference in their ability to move things forward. I can't stress that enough, both in terms of what I've seen and experienced firsthand. And the other part of this is just about being your own champion and celebrating your own successes. One of the things that Elaine did this week on the forum was to ask everybody to write down, what are your successes? What's working for you? How are things going? And I'm going to encourage all of you to take action and do that and go out there and go, okay, what are some things that I'm noticing are changing? What is success been like for us and our family? And share that, because it, like our kids, you know, we focus on what's broken for us as well. And so I still remember, you know, when I started looking at this shift and going, okay, I only lost my cool once today instead of three times today, or whatever it is. You know, we're all taking baby steps here, and so you want to celebrate and move those things forward. So what comes up for you guys as we talk about this idea of celebrating and championing? And I see that someone else joined us. What was on? Mystery guest in unknown location. Nope. Okay, I'm going to go back to April and Sue.
Well,
go ahead.
Sorry. One of the themes that came up is, I guess I kind of am in my head hearing kind of a juxtaposition of two different things. And last night, my daughter had not kept something in the family that we'd asked her to. And I've gotten two different texts about it. And I was okay once I got the first text, but when I got the second one, and then she walked in the door, and I was not celebrating anything at that moment. I was discussing with her all the things that reasons why we had told her not to talk about this and that wasn't acceptable. And you know, I watched her hang her head, and that was not my best moment. But this morning I needed her to get moving. I called her molasses in the morning. And I was like, look, if you go brush your teeth and come back down here, I will clap for you. And I did. And she's like, what can I do next? And I was like, go get your shoes on. Will you clap for me then, too? Yes, I will.
Awesome. What a great use of humor and celebrating. And I mean, I think that's the piece of it is, you know, sometimes it's silly stuff like that that really does change the dynamic. How many things did she get done with the clapping?
Four. So, yeah. My son was like, that's not going to work for me, Mom. I was like, okay, well, will you please go get your stuff done anyway? Yeah.
Well, so what did you learn from that situation, what did you learn from the juxtaposition? I can't even say it, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. Well, I see we still both, you know, yes, both times I got my point across that we walked out a lot happier this morning than last night. I felt bad. She felt bad. it was a mistake. It was, and, you know, we don't need to be, we all make mistakes. No one is perfect. And, you know, we need the positive. There were good things out of it, too. And so it felt a whole lot better this morning for everybody.
No, I think that makes sense. And I think that one of the things, you know, because we tend to jump right in, and I think that my guess is, April, it was probably you were triggered in the situation, right? So, you know, she walked in and you've gotten the text and you're like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe this happened. And we had this conversation and what were you thinking? And you're triggered, right? So you're reacting instead of responding. So, you know, if we go back to some of our other tools, if you start with curiosity, so that, didn't you say, weren't you the one that said that was one of your favorites? You know, start with curiosity. Well, what was going on? I know we had a conversation about not sharing, but and it looks like you had a hard time keeping that, what was going on. And then you go to acknowledging and validating, which is, oh, wow, I can see how you would think that it was okay to share in that instance, even though we had talked about it, or I'm making this up, right? But, you know, it's you're getting curious, you're acknowledging her perspective, and then by the time you get past those two steps, then you go, okay, what do I want to do about it? Because when we start with, oh, my gosh, I'm triggered, I've got to fix this, right? We're in search and destroy mode, which most of us don't parent very well from search and destroy mode. But, you know, so take the time, get curious, figure out what's going on for your child, acknowledge and validate. It makes perfect sense that you would have reacted that way or you would have done that or, you know, any kid in that situation would choose an Xbox over homework, whatever it is, and then move to what do I want to do about it.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was...
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think, at that point, I think it's a really good thing to remember to, hey, if you are triggered, you are in search and destroy, and that's not where you want to come from at that moment. And the funniest thing was, is we'd asked, you know, her not to share, and she's like, I only told 9 people. We're like, oh, brother. Where's the brick wall? Where I beat my head against it. Anyway.
Well, and isn't it interesting how everybody has a different perspective of what keeping something private means, right?
Yeah.
So it teaches us to be very specific, I think.
Yep.
Just in case our kids have different perspectives. So,
yep.
So what comes up? Sue, what comes up for you?
Well, I was listening as you were talking about, like, the whole positive parenting and how it's demanded for solving a problem. And when thinking of my son, who's, like, almost 11 now, and seeing his reactions to some of my comments, the thing that I find that works so well that just, like, bonds us for this moment is this being able to validate the incredible amount of work that he's doing, whether it's school or homework, and just to kind of put everything on hold and stop and just give him my absolute total attention and let him know that I really see how hard he's working and that I see that it's challenging and that I'm truly impressed with the energy he's putting into it. And it just grabs him. It's kind of getting me right now, but it's wonderful to see that. It's just great.
Yeah. Well, and doesn't it feel great to just, I mean, to just celebrate that for a second and think about how good you feel right now. And, you know, and I know what you mostly want is for him to feel good about that too.
Right, right. And it does. It's just amazing to me how powerful and impact it is for him and how it's like, okay, this is a place I need to go to more often with him. Not overdo it, but this is a place that has a lot of importance for him. And so to make sure that I remember that too.
So what do you think gets most in the way for you when you focus on this?
Say that again.
What do you think gets most in the way for you around this issue?
It gets in the way for me. For instance, are you asking why is it something that just I don't do as often, or?
Yeah.
Well, you know, when you're talking about when, I think part of it is just to stop and really look at what's working versus always feeling the pressure of, okay, with your homework, this, and this needs to be done by tomorrow. Or, you know, instead of feeling that pressure of what hasn't reached its end goal, to really stop and look just to see what it's taken for him to get to the point that he is at that very moment.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I wonder if that's part of it. I'm not quite certain.
No, that makes sense. And I think the other thing that's coming up for me is, as you're talking, is, you know, we're helping our kids, you know, climb the stairs towards independence. And, you know, so much of the time we spend is up at, you know, it's like if our kids are at fifth grade or sixth grade, we stand on the sixth grade step and say, get up here. And then, it's eighth grade again, and it's like, get up here. You know, it's like if we go down to the level that they're at, and we can say, you know, we can, for all of our kids, we can see progress from where they were last year. I mean, yes, we're calling new challenges and new opportunities, and things are much are different than they were last year, and there's definitely more maturity and more progress. But we compare them to where we think they should be, or where society says they should be, or where it would be nice if they were, instead of where they've been and where they're headed. Because it's just so easy to kind of get caught in that comparison rut.
Right. That's well put. I like the way you say it, because it is marvelous just to see the difference from 1 month to the next, but from 1 year, because it's just so obvious too, the difference from 1 year to the next with so many fields, you know, within one kid. So.
Well, and that's a great reminder, because here's the thing. This is all about our kids' executive function. I mean, 90% of the challenges that you guys are having are because your kids have a deficit in some aspect of executive function. And executive function is something that's learned and developed over time, just like learning to walk, just like learning how to speak a language. Whatever it is, it's something that's learned over time. And so it's easy to say, you know, why isn't my kid walking? But you can see when they're crawling, and then they're pulling themselves up, and then they're doing all these other steps. It's I mean, that's really what we're going through. It's just at a different pace than what's typical. But it is really a stage by stage process.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask again, it does look like there's somebody else on the call. Is there somebody else who's joined us? I wonder if you have yourself on mute. So we've got a little bit of time here. I don't know, Sue, you both had one-on-one sessions last week, so we should flip a coin and see who wants to get a little bit more laser coaching, but I'm happy to do any problem solving or laser coaching if you guys have something specific you want to talk about.
Well, I have a question,
mm-hmm.
if I may, and that is last week when we were talking about the different types of motivation, I'm assuming, and I wanted to ask to see if this is true. So do kids, you know, sometimes there'll be a couple of the motivators where it just really click for them. And do they kind of, I don't want to say outgrow, but do they shift from one type of motivation to a different type as time goes by?
You know, I think that's a really good question. I think it's important to kind of notice what your kids, what do and don't motivate your, does and doesn't motivate your kids. Two things that I noticed happen. So, number one, the ADHD brain gets bored. Right? So it's kind of like if you've got the same motivator over and over and over again, it's like, okay, yeah, I got this. I'm not motivated by it anymore.
Yeah.
You know, so for a while, my son was using, he would withhold his dessert until his homework was done. So it was his motivation. It's like, when my homework's done, then I can have ice cream. And that was the way he was motivating himself to get, you know, his homework done. But then it was kind of like, yeah, no, I'm kind of over this, right? So even though he loves ice cream, it hasn't changed, but it was just kind of, he was bored. And that's really just simply an ADHD brain loves stimulation and it's motivated by intrigue and things like that. And so there's that piece going on. The other thing that I do know is that for most of our kids, as they get older, the external motivation versus the internal motivation or intrinsic motivation, the shift is more dynamic. And so, you know, our kids are less and less motivated by outside feedback, outside praise, outside intervention. And we want them to have that because we want them to begin to get their own motivations. And one of the things we talked about, I didn't mention this in the call earlier today, we were talking about the language we use when we're celebrating. And as my kids got older, I distinctly shift from I'm proud of you to are you proud of yourself or how proud you must be for yourself. You know, so it was this sort of the motivation becomes theirs to own. Rather than doing this for me, you're doing this for you. And I've been tried to be very purposeful about making that shift. And I think that our kids are, you know, our kids at the age where you can have them start seeing and noticing what it is that does motivate them. And so if you have that open communication, I know because my son knows so much about how his brain works and the fact that the motivation that needs to be there, we can have different conversations about motivation than we could if he didn't understand the role. So does that make sense?
It does.
So how could you do some detective work to figure out what some of his motivators are?
Well, what I did before these last couple of weeks was just try on the different types and just see what was effective for him. But some of it worked and some of it, as I said, didn't. And I think being able to see what's a motivator for him that comes from another person, that's not for me, and to be able to evaluate, you know, assuming if it is a successful one, evaluate it and figure out, check it out. So this seems to motivate him. Sometimes if I were to tell him, like, your story about your son, that there'd be ice cream afterwards, the weight would just kill him. You know, to be able to get the homework done and have to wait that long for the ice cream. It's just the waiting aspect is a real tricky one for him.
Yeah.
So it's hard sometimes to figure out what will be a good motivator that'll really click for him and maybe have a little longevity so we can use it for a little bit.
Well, and I think that your instinct about noticing what happens with other folks and what motivates them in other situations is a really helpful situation. I mean, if you notice, I think just even in observing when our kids are on track and when our kids are having a hard time staying on track, and then if we can ask them if they're you know, self-aware enough, we can say, hey, what do you think was different? You were able to get, you know, all of your English done. And you had a hard time when you were trying to, over here working on your Spanish, what was different in having that conversation. But sometimes you can just notice and see, wow, he really flew through his homework tonight. What was going on? Oh, well, it's Tuesday night and, you know, SpongeBob is on Tuesday nights and I wanted to watch SpongeBob. Well, you know that watching his favorite TV show, it becomes a motivator for him, you know, that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So it's about being a detective and you can, there's some, you know, really simple questions you could ask your kid. You could ask, you know, what are the things you love to do? What are the things that make you feel really good about yourself? You know, and so you can do some of those more kind of inquisitive sorts of things instead of a formal conversation to give you some hints as to what might be a motivation for them. April, anything else you'd add from, I know that you've got a different perspective on this, but.
Well, I guess one of the things that we've been dealing with motivators sometimes the motivators are so exciting that then the homework only gets like partially done. So I guess that's one of the things that we struggle with because we found a really great motivator, but then the iPad got really exciting, but you know, just setting, I guess we found we had to set out very specific boundaries of how motivators could be used. I mean, or
that,
how...
That, finish your thought, sorry.
Oh, that's... It's done.
Yeah, no, I think that makes sense. And I still remember Randy Coleman, who's our guest expert who talks about video games. And you know, he always recommends that you know, that you not make video games a reward for finishing homework if you're worried that your kid will be impulsive and rush through homework and not do a great job just so that they can get to video games, right? So it's the same thing with the ice cream. It's the sort of, you know, will the quality of whatever it is change because you've got that as a motivation? So maybe they earn screen time, but they don't get it immediately. So, you know, it's like if you do your homework by the time dinner is done, by the time we get ready for dinner, then you can have an hour worth of screen time after dinner or something like that. So it's not the, okay, when it's the minute it's done, I get to do this other thing, and so you're rushing through. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. That's actually a good kind of if-then. I like that setup.
Yeah. Yeah, my kids actually earn screen time for things that happen in the morning rather than at night because it's, you know, it's kind of like, so my son gets his iPod at night when he's in the car on time. You know, so that's always the deal.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Yeah, so does that whole idea of earning the screen time, but it's delayed until the evening of when he can actually use it, at the beginning when you introduced that, was there resistance because it couldn't be an immediate satisfaction or gratification type of thing?
I think that's a good question. I think part of it is the maturity of your child. And
yeah.
So when we talk about motivators, we talk about making sure that the that they're age appropriate and the delay makes sense. We were talking last time about, you know, a parent had a reward system and they got the reward on Saturday for something that was done on Tuesday. And for younger kids, that's probably way too long. You know, even if they, maybe if they get a chip or something to put in the jar so they can see the number of chips by the end of the day and you count them every day and go, look, you've got 5 chips already, you're almost there. That can be a motivation, but you're right that with younger kids, particularly that delayed sort of thing can be difficult. So maybe you give them something immediately in the morning that they can turn back in. So it's like, you know, I'm giving you your iPod pass, and so they've got their iPod pass. Woohoo, I got it! And then they can give the iPod pass back to you to get their iPod in the afternoon. Something like that might be enough to make it different. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Okay, so there's a step
okay.
within there for the immediacy, making it immediate.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Great.
So,
and
there's lots of cool screen time principles on Pinterest too, so you don't have to recreate the wheel.
Yes. Thank you for sharing that. You're right. There is. So I want to shift back to positive parenting a little bit. Is there any other thoughts you guys had on that in terms of what's easy for you? What do you find to be most challenging? We talked a little bit about triggers and the challenges that when we're triggered, it brings into play. Any other thoughts around that?
I have one that's we've been struggling with being positive is time and place. So the baby's screaming. Poor Grayson. The little one gets constipated. There are days he is grouchy. And if he's sitting there screaming, you know, then there's, you know, poor Nate just doesn't get it that that's not the time to go ask right now, can I go get a frog from the pet store? Or, Mom, I'd like to have this deep discussion with you about black holes at this current moment while I'm changing the diaper while the baby's screaming. And I really struggle to be positive when he's just when the social time frame is just not there, and so I'm
okay. So what's the reasonable expectation at his level of development? What's the reasonable expectation that so scenario one is he should be able to see the cues and, you know, a large percentage of the time be able to not say the wrong thing, or two, that he should be able to, when you say, hey, buddy, great question, can I talk to you in a few minutes when I'm done changing the baby's diaper, and go off and entertain himself for a few minutes until you come back? Or three, neither of the above.
I don't think he can read the cues yet.
Okay.
I think I'm hoping we could get to the point where I can say, hey, Nate, I need you to just hold on for a few minutes. I think that's about where we are developmentally right now.
Okay.
Because I can do that with my 7-year-old. He's almost 11, but I think he's about that. But the problem is he's really frustrated and just disappointed in me that I can't do that right now. And that's where my trigger happens, is that I feel I want to be engaged with him. I would like my 10-year-old to talk to me. It doesn't happen that much. And when he wants to talk about black holes, I'd like to do that. But it's that, how do I keep that pop, you know, that not now positive?
So wait, is it more about not getting triggered, or is it more about not wanting to disappoint him, or is it more about, you know, what's really going on?
I think it's probably both. I feel like a bad mom when I can't, when I miss those opportunities with him to engage.
Yeah. I think, well, of course. So it's like your kid comes to you and they want to have a conversation about black holes, and you want to, but it just is not the right moment. Of course you feel disappointed, and of course you feel sad for disappointing him because he's excited, and it's a transition for him to have to do something else.
Yes.
So how can you honor both? How can you stay connected to him and do what you need to do in the moment?
I'm not sure. I've been, you know, trying to be like, hold on, I'll get back to you in 5. But honestly, sometimes I haven't honored that because I can't tell you how long a baby's going to scream. It's that if I got back to him in 5 minutes, he would be thrilled. If I have to get back to him in 35 minutes, then I was dishonest.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And so I guess the question is, if the goal in that moment is he wants to connect with you and your goal in that moment is you'd like to connect with him, is there something you could do so that you could, you know, and this, we're just using the example of taking care of the baby. So is there a way to take care of the baby and connect with him now?
Well, he wouldn't mind talking straight through the screening about black holes. I guess that's
right.
my difficulty of talking over a screaming baby about black holes.
Well, and I'm wondering, this is just popping into my head, and it may not be applicable at all, but what if you said, hey, buddy, help me calm the baby down, and we can talk about black holes?
Maybe it would work. He might just rev him up.
He might, but he's connecting with you because that's the thing. He wants to help. He wants to be connected. He wants to be part of the action. I mean, who knows? The reason he wants to talk about black holes in that moment might be because part of him's feeling left out because you've got all your emotional energy focused on a screaming baby.
True. And so, the other one says, Mom, why do you spend so much time with the baby? And then we talk about it. Nate just brings up black holes. And maybe that's a really good point, that he's also at the developmental age where he doesn't always give me, he doesn't always verbalize what he does need at that moment. Most of the time he
probably
doesn't
even know.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Probably
okay,
not.
So knowing that, how would you handle the situation differently?
I think I need to acknowledge the fact that he's come to me and be positive about it. Oh, I really do want to talk to you about that. Not just start out with, not now the baby's screaming. But to start out with, hey, I'm really, I would really love to talk to you about that. Do you want to help me calm the baby down and we can talk about it? Or would you, because auditory for him is really, can be a big thing too. Or do you want to talk about it later? Maybe we can talk about it when I'm scratching your back tonight if we can't talk about it now. But he really thrives on choice, too. So if I gave him those two choices, that might he would feel like I'd honored his – and I would feel, as long as I remember to do it, to talk about the black holes later, I think that would be a good solution, too, at bedtime or right then. he might really want to be involved. Some days he wants to be involved with Gray, sometimes not. But, and who knows? You know, he is 19 months now. It was scary to hand him over to a really bouncy 9-year-old, but I think I need to realize, too, that he is getting a whole lot better with Grayson and trust that, too.
Well, and I think that, I mean, your instinct is strong there. I think that, I mean, the other piece of it is, I'm honest, is like, what system do you need in place to help to remember when he comes to you and you're in one of those panicky moments with the baby to go, okay, wait, I told him I'd talk to him later. How do I remember, or how do I, or if it really is, if I am overwhelmed, can I find a way to gently ask him to say, hey, remind me at bedtime, because I probably will forget. You know, so it's not that I don't care, but I just, you know how we all forget. I mean, it can be an emotional intelligence moment as well that, you know, you let them know. Sometimes mom forgets those sorts of things, and it doesn't mean she doesn't care. It just means that it's a crazy day.
It just means I have 7,000 other things going through my head. I wish I could attend to them all at the moment, yet.
Yes. Well, and if I'm honest, sometimes those things are things that I put in my calendar. You know, so it's like I will, you know, write down, talk to Hannah about blah, blah, blah. You know, so I make sure that I don't forget to follow up. The other thing that, and I don't know if you talked to Lorraine about this, but the other thing that can be really helpful in those instances is code words. So if we know our kid's going to be disappointed or we need to put them off, you know, it's like you could have some kind of fun signal that you did. It's like, okay, we got to come up with some secret signal that we can give each other. But I'm really busy with the baby, but I really would rather be playing with you, and I don't want to forget, you know. So what you know, could we like cross our fingers or do, you know, just do something silly that's kind of a secret symbol that the two of you guys have to keep it light when you know that you're in those sort of, okay, I want to be doing something that I'm not doing moment.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. I've tried that with Elin, and she's funny. We made up a code word when I had to tell her something she didn't want to know, and then I said it with him, and she's like, I don't want to listen to anything, and had a meltdown. It was the funniest thing. But I was like, okay, well, that one didn't work for you. We will, but I need to try it with Nathaniel now.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
She's only 7. I'm hoping to retry that one a little later with her. So,
well, and it's all about experimenting. I think you're, you know, keep trying. You can do it. So,
yeah.
All right, so I'm going to do our wrap-up questions. So, any other thoughts before we move into the wrap-up?
No.
No, I don't think so.
Great. All right, so we're on page 47, and we're just going to take a minute and answer the 4 questions. So what did you pay most attention to? What did you focus on? What became clear? What takeaways did you have? What's a realistic action step for you to take? And what do you want to do to set yourself up for success with the action? Take a few minutes, write that down, and I'd love to hear from you guys in terms of what came up for you during the call today. So when you're done, go ahead and jump in. Don't wait for me to call on you.
Well, I can go ahead and start. I'm going to go ahead, I think, for my challenge for this week. It's kind of a repeat of last week, but to still work with Gabe in regards to staying engaged within homework by testing out the different type of motivators to see what works best for him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What was it? So what was it in the conversation today that kind of stood out for you the most?
Well, I think first off, it was seeing the effect of me when I was talking about validating his hard work. And mm-hmm. that struck me as interesting. So it proves to me that it's important to also keep that one in the very front of my mind and put it to use, not overuse it, but put it to use a little more so that he has those moments of real connection too and feeling proud about his successes. Because I think often he doesn't see them. It's kind of like what we're talking about as being parents. So often we focus just on what needs to be fixed. Well, he also needs to see those successes that he's doing. So help him show those.
Love that. Love that. Yeah, I can't wait to hear how that goes.
Okay.
April, what about you?
I think just even, you know, comparing the two situations really kind of has continued to run through my head, and just we want to feel the smile and not the head down. And I think one of the things that I really practically would like to do is find the good first. Sometimes I might need to redirect again, but, you know, try to remember when I'm getting things done to, oh, you got these three done, you know, even if it's only one, or, oh, well, you're awake. Yay. Now let's do five more things. Find something good to say first, because even if I need to say, okay, we still have, you know, a few more things to go, but the good first, I think, will help me and especially my personality. I'm usually looking for, okay, what do I need to fix? Okay, good job, April, move on. And that I need, and they're not adults, and remembering that too. This week, I really want to say thank you. I ask them to do a lot of things, and they do a lot of things, especially when Jace is at work, and to say thank you if they're helping me, and to look for the good. And I may need to do that when they're not home. And even if this week it takes writing them down to get that as a habit, then I want to do that. And I like putting it in the calendar. I can set little buzzy reminders on my phone for myself if I need to get Nate to follow up with something I wanted to talk with him or Elin about.
Cool. Love that. Awesome. Awesome. All right. Any parting thoughts before we hang up?
It's warm here.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, it's warm here. It's making everyone in Wisconsin happy.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, I'm glad that you're having that. It was been such a wacky winter for everybody. So, good. Great call, guys. Our next call is in a couple weeks. Let's see. Our next group call is on the 24th. Just a reminder that next week, you guys are getting invitations now to the Lifeline calls. There are two of those next week. There's one on Tuesday at lunchtime, and there's one on Thursday night. You know, those are there to just Elaine or I dial in, and we're just there to answer questions or do some user coaching. There's no full agenda, but it's just open up. So take advantage of that, and make sure you go out and type in your celebrations out in the member forum. And have a great week.
Thank you so much.